I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke.
Happy New Year, Joanna!
Happy New Year, Emma! Obviously, we've recorded this a little while in advance, so it feels really bizarre to be saying Happy New Year, but yeah, Happy New Year!
Yeah, it will be New Year, so Happy New Year to everyone. And we hope you all had a nice Hogmanay, even if you did nothing, like we will have done nothing because you're not allowed to do anything.
Yeah, you need to explain what Hogmanay is to our non-Scottish listeners.
So Hogmanay is the Scottish term for New Year's Eve, and traditionally you would do, you'd go to a ceilidh maybe, you'd go to a family party, something like that. There's the big countdown to midnight. Some people go to the streets of Edinburgh, there's a big, big party in Edinburgh city centre, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes on. People pay good money to go and stand in the freezing cold, packed up against each other, to listen to a band which they can't really hear, but then is played over, like, played over TVs because you're so far away from the actual band. But you have to do it. It's like a rite of passage, I think, for kids in Edinburgh.
I've never done it. I thought it was really for tourists.
No. Everyone I know, like most people I know, I would say have done it at some point or another. But it's a waste of money. Honestly, I wouldn't do it again. But then...
You've done it once.
Yeah, I'm totally for getting packed in places with people that I don't really want to be socializing.
You want to be
with.
Warm and comfortable and have a seat and a drink, goddammit.
I do. That's exactly what I want to do. I don't want to have people like flinging cups everywhere. I don't...
of piss.
Yeah, and I'm too like cheap to spend that kind of money on drinks and stuff like that as well. So yeah, unless I'm in a nice cocktail bar, I'll happily pay pretty much whatever you ask me for a drink. If I'm drinking it out of a plastic cup, that's when I take offence.
Yeah, especially if it's beer.
Yeah, like
beer in a plastic cup is just it never tastes good. Like it ruins
flat the second you get it, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And also, I mean, I think the thing for me, the reason why I'm not big normally on going out for Hogmanay is because it's such a nightmare trying to get home. Taxis are, if you can get one, then you're lucky. But if you do get one, you'll be charged a fortune for it.
Yeah.
It's just complete chaos. It's a nightmare. And even if you want to go into some crap club, they charge you a fortune because it's Hogmanay.
Yeah, it's
because
like 50 quid or some nonsense.
Yeah,
to
it's just ridiculous.
They can pay me £50 to go in. Not that everyone's, you know, beating down my door paying me to go to their club, but...
Yeah, no.
you catch my drift.
I'd be happy in the pub with a pint within walking distance of my home.
Yeah.
Ideal Hogmanay for me. Or even in my house with some fun neighbours, having a bit of a knees up.
Yeah, or not cross your own threshold at all and don't see anyone else. Just cats. just cats and wine.
Don't even get dressed. Just stay in your pyjamas.
Just rock in the fetal position for 12 solid hours.
That's the dream. Well, on the phone to your mental health counsellor.
Happy New Year!
Oh, God, yeah.
As if they can't get one day off, bless them.
Yeah.
No, I think this year is going to be a quiet one. I don't know, there's something... I just find it really anticlimactic. It's something about it. Like, you count down and then you're like, oh,
yeah.
That's it then. Cool.
Do you know, the thing for me, the thing that I really like about New Year is I have such a positive feeling. You know, you have the 1st of January, New Year's Day, and it's bizarre to me. So, Emma, tell me if you are of the same opinion. So my understanding of New Year's Day is that you typically have a meal with friends or family, typically have steak pie. You have a bit of a celebration. You make a bit of a day of it, don't you?
Yeah. Unless you're hungover.
It's not really a thing in England.
Oh.
They celebrate Hogmanay, but they just don't really do anything for New Year's Day. It's really bizarre.
Another thing that we do that I think is done around the world, but it has different names, is Lunnie Dooking. So
yes.
I tend to do that every year, but won't be able to do it this year because it's not going to be a thing because there's too many people. But you can or cannot, it's up to you, dress up in a ridiculous outfit. And where I live in South Queensbury, thousands of us march along the high street with a band, like a marching band, bagpipes and all sorts. And then you fling yourself into the Firth of Forth, the water that comes from the North Sea, which is usually absolutely Baltic. And yeah.
That means freezing.
Yeah, literally damn near freezing. And yeah, you fling yourself in and it's a bit of good luck. It's a way to start the year. And they call you Loony Duke in because a loony is a mad person. So I've done that various times. And yeah, I'm a bit gutted that it's not going to be done this year. Last year, I ended up on the BBC website.
Yeah,
dressed as a crab.
Yes. Yeah. So, I think I dress as a haggis.
Oh, you'd make a great haggis.
Yeah, thanks.
Well,
yeah,
you are a mother of haggis cats, so...
It's... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd like to dress as a haggis. I've never done it, but I would do it. I would do it. I think it sounds like a really, really nice way to start the new year. It's almost like a clean slate.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Definitely.
I always have this really positive feeling in the new year. It's funny because I am so keen. I love Christmas so much. I'm so keen to get my decorations up and celebrate and all the build up because it's my favourite time of year. I love being with friends and family and I love giving gifts to people. I love shopping for the gifts. I love all the good food and the movies and all the cosy nights. I enjoy everything about it. But as soon as sort of New Year rocks around and I've had New Year's Day, I feel really kind of refreshed and renewed and ready for the new year and feel really positive and inspired. And it's always just quite a nice feeling. And I'm keen to just put all the Christmas decorations away and get all my house in order and just look forward to the year ahead. But also it's always tinged with a little bit of sadness because I'm like, it's a shame that I have to wait another year for it all to occur again. But
it's far too far away from Christmas at that point.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bit rubbish. I think for me, the whole Loony Duke thing is a little bit of a bonding experience. Like everyone that does it is kind of cheering each other on.
Yeah, camaraderie.
Yeah, and whenever there's a marching band and drums, you just kind of get, I don't know, a bit riled up. You're freezing cold, so you're all shivering, you know, juttering about to keep warm. People are singing and dancing and everyone's taking pictures and just having a good laugh and all that kind of stuff. And it you know, all the money goes to charity as well, which is really good. There's often loads of photographers. There was like a helicopter and drones and everything. Obviously, this happens all over the world and it's just people running into whatever body of water is closest to them. But this one is a particularly big deal. I recommend it if you haven't done so already. Go and run into, if you can swim, let me preface that. If you can swim, go find a body of water, preferably as cold as possible to really rejuvenate you, and fling yourself in it and then tell me how you feel, please.
Hi, I'm Jules from Riddle Me That True Crime. I have a PhD in transpersonal counseling and am obsessed with all things crime and psychology. I focus on unsolved cases. I typically cover one case over a month, like I recently did with the case of Robert Wan. I had a microbiologist and forensics expert, as well as a criminologist, analyze the evidence, and they came to very different conclusions. One believed Robert was murdered by one or all three of the men present in the home, and the other believed it was an outside intruder. 2020 has been a strange year. If you're looking for a deep dive into some of your favorite unsolved cases with the assistance of experts, then look no further. Check out Riddle Me That True Crime wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Welcome to 2021. Hopefully a better year than 2020.
Yeah, but hopefully you will still have time to listen to us talk about true crime.
Yes. All right, so let me hear about your case. Let's kick off 2021 with a great new episode. I'm keen.
Let's do it. All right. So the case I have for you today is that of Tracy Wilde. Ring any bells?
No.
Okay. Tracy Wilde was a 21-year-old. She was a mother of a 3-year-old girl and she lived in Barmulloch, Glasgow. So I'll take you back. This was November in 1997. Tracy was a really well-liked young woman. who was known to dote on her daughter. At the time, she'd been working as a sex worker in Glasgow's Red Light District. It's unknown exactly when this started, but she had told some friends and actually some neighbours of her profession. They were really shocked, but they urged her to stay safe. Her mother didn't know, unfortunately, at the time and later found out. On the evening of the 23rd of November 1997, Tracy went into the city centre to work. She's seen on CCTV with a presumed client at some point during the evening. And then in the early morning of the 24th of November, around about 3 a.m, she visited a drugs crisis centre. So that's one of the places where you can go and exchange needles for clean ones. Tracy had a known heroin addiction as well at the time, which presumably tied into her work. The last known CCTV images of Tracy are from around 3:30 a.m. Tracy is seen with a dark-haired man. They walk along a street and then it's odd. It looks like he either spins around like they're dancing, like twirls around, or they have a brief altercation. This is from 1997. The CCTV is actually surprisingly clear for the time, but it is a little bit jerky, so it's hard to tell. But then it looks like they continue walking along together, and they're holding an umbrella above them, and that doesn't get disturbed. So it is maybe just like a jokey kind of thing.
Yeah, playing about.
But that's not known, really. They continue to walk along the street together, and that's the last that they're seen on CCTV. So that's about 3:30 in the morning. At 4:40 a.m. that morning, Tracy's neighbour, who was called Mary McAnamy, she heard arguing in Tracy's flat. She couldn't hear exactly what was being said, but she could hear like mumbling voices. And she then heard Tracy yelling for Mary's mother. So Mary was the neighbour. Her mother's name was Sadie. And Tracy was shouting, "Sadie, Sadie." So Mary went to investigate, but she couldn't see into Tracy's flat, and then she couldn't hear anything else. So she went back to her own place. The last thing Mary heard was Tracy's door being slammed shut, and then the rattling of keys, as if someone was locking the door. Later on in that day, so this is the 24th of November, some of Tracy's friends went to visit her, but they didn't get any reply when they knocked at her door. And then Tracy had an appointment to go to a support group. I believe it was related to her drugs habit, and she never showed up. So the support worker raised the alarm. A worker from the support group turned up to Tracy's flat and noticed that a balcony door was mysteriously open. Didn't look like it should be open, and they thought that's a little bit odd. That, along with the fact that they hadn't heard from her. They knocked on the door of Mary McAnamy, and they managed to get into Tracy's home. When they entered the flat, they found a pretty grim scene. Tracy was found dead, lying on her back, with a dressing gown over her body. She was fully dressed, and there were marks and bruising all around her neck, and she had been strangled to death. DNA from an unknown man was found on Tracy's body and her clothes, and there was a number of fingerprints in the flat. A large-scale manhunt was launched, including DNA being taken from over 200 known clients of the Red Light District in Glasgow. It's actually really interesting. There was a man who worked with some of the sex workers, and for their own safety, he would take down license plates of vehicles that were known to frequent there just in case something happened to someone.
That's good.
Yeah, so they checked all of those. They checked a lot of the clients, and nothing really came up. So the next year, they did a TV appeal, and that was surrounding the CCTV footage. They aired it, and they wanted people to identify the mystery man that was last seen with Tracy, because even if he wasn't the person that murdered her, he may have known something about it or where she was last seen, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So a woman called in, and she stated that either that man or someone who looked incredibly similar to him had lived in student accommodation in Glasgow at that time. presumably she gave a bit more detail than that. Just from my own point of view, I think you would say, oh, he lived in such and such halls, or do you know what I mean? So they kind of felt that they were looking at a student, and they felt that he was foreign. The DNA that they had taken from the body indicated that it wasn't a Caucasian male. So essentially the police, it's a bit of an outdated view, but I'm guessing that at the time the demographics of the Glaswegian population was maybe predominantly white, whereas now I would say it's a lot more mixed. You know, there's a lot of migration and immigration. So they essentially heard that the guy was foreign and he was a student, and I think they've kind of zeroed in on that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The case was aired on Crime Watch twice, hashtag bring back Crime Watch, and a TV series called Unsolved. However, it still ended up falling cold. So that was from 1998. And the crime actually took place in 1997 in November. In 2013, the case was reopened for a cold case review. So police, as I said, focused on foreign men who were students in Glasgow at the time of the murder. Suspicion fell on an Indian man named Sugat Mukherjee. Sugat Mukherjee is reported to have arrived in the UK in August in 1997 to pursue a one-year degree course at the Glasgow College of Nautical Studies. Did not know that existed, so that's a bit of information for you. He stayed in accommodation provided on the campus. Indian newspapers reported that he was quizzed by police at the time over allegations of indecency in a public place in October of that year in Glasgow. A short time after Tracy's murder, Mukherjee is said to have dropped out of the course and flown back to India. Police found Mukherjee's premature departure from Scotland suspicious, and alongside his resemblance to the man in the CCTV, namely the fact that he had protruding teeth and the presence of quote-unquote foreign DNA found on Tracy's body, they put forward a case to the CPS, the Crown Prosecution Service, and in October of 2014, they granted a warrant for Mukherjee for the murder of Tracy. So he was still living in India. When he left, that's it, he stayed there. He got married, he had children, and he had a successful career in sales. He travelled all over the globe. When he found out that he was the main suspect in the murder inquiry, he stated, quote, "It shocked me to the core. My entire family were shattered. The first time I saw Tracy Wilde's photograph was when my mum and dad and my wife came down to meet me in prison. I had never seen that lady in my entire life." The following January, Mr. Mukherjee's case featured in the media after he was accused of absconding and was taken into judicial custody. After being branded a fugitive, he spent more than 3 weeks in Mumbai prison before being released on bail. Mr. Mukherjee believes that the case against him was based on his premature departure from Glasgow and the CCTV evidence. He stressed he had never been with a prostitute. Once again, we would call them sex workers now, but that's the term used at the time. And he stated that he has been happily married for 21 years. However, he found himself at the centre of a protracted extradition battle. The Crown Prosecution Service and the UK were trying to extradite him back to Scotland to face the charges, and this took a heavy toll on his health. The cloud of suspicion also left him unable to get a job and reliant on financial handouts from his parents and his in-laws. He's also stated that his children were bullied, they had to move house, and his whole career was destroyed. As Mukherjee was not extradited back to Scotland, the case didn't progress. It should be noted that he did give a DNA sample that was given to the police in Scotland, but nothing came back as a result of that. In 2018, a different man who was arrested on an unrelated assault charge gave his DNA to police in Glasgow, and the case blew wide open. The DNA from the crime scene was a match to that man. So Sugat Mukherjee, despite giving the DNA, to the police hadn't been cleared and they were still trying to extradite him.
Can I ask a quick question?
Of course.
So did they get the results back from the DNA and they knew it wasn't a match to him, but they still tried to extradite him, or is that not clear?
It was only after they got the DNA match to the real culprit that, and he actually wasn't exonerated for at least a few months, because it was 2018 in October, and then it was all the way through, he wasn't officially exonerated until the 1st of May 2019.
That's interesting. And also it surprises me that you said there was a protracted extradition battle, because I thought that with it being India,
yeah,
there would be no problem in extraditing him.
Apparently there was a lot of red tape, and I believe that the Indian officials were not comfortable with the evidence, which is unsurprising, seeing as he didn't do it.
And understandable, yeah.
I just find it really frustrating. And he's essentially saying we went from... ours is like a riches to rags story now, because they decided I did something that I didn't do and my life has been ruined and we're never going to recover from it.
Yeah.
Just think it's really sad. But yeah, there's, if you Google his name and this case, screeds of articles come up, you can imagine, like Daily Mail and everything. This is the man the police are trying to extradite from India. He was, you know, did this, that and the next thing, says he's a married man, but we, you know, we know the truth and all this kind of, yeah, it's exactly what you'd expect. The man that they found was called Zi Min Chen. He was a 44-year-old husband and a father of two who had been born in China. He moved to the UK illegally in the 1990s. He had stayed in Glasgow following Tracy's murder and had set up a Chinese takeaway in Annie'sland, which he ran. Prior to his arrest for assault, he wasn't known to the police at all.
All right.
It was also found that his fingerprints were a match to those found at the scene. Chen was arrested for Tracy's murder and initially claimed to have had nothing to do with it. However, shortly before he was due to stand trial in April of 2019, he pled guilty. According to Chen, Tracy had taken him back to her flat that night and an argument broke out between them, which turned violent. Chen was worried that Tracy would call the police and he would be sent back to China. He lost control and strangled Tracy to death, covering her with a dressing gown. He took her keys with him when he left and locked the door behind him. He then spent over two decades living his life freely while Tracy's family searched for answers. Tragically, Tracy's mother passed away a couple of years prior to the case being resolved. For Sugat Mukherjee, the arrest of Chen was a relief to him. He followed the case. He actually found out about the arrest online. No one contacted him to tell him. And like I said, he wasn't officially exonerated until the 1st of May 2019. Mukherjee says that the accusation has shattered his life and there will never be any way to heal the damage that has been done. In May of 2019, Chen was sentenced to life in prison and was told he must wait 20 years before he could apply for parole. Lord Arthurson told Chen, quote, "You committed a brutal, cowardly and murderous attack on a vulnerable young woman in her own home. You then fled the scene, taking care to remove Ms. Wilde's house keys and to lock the flat door behind you, and you have avoided justice for two decades." He went on, "Having inflicted this terrible loss upon the family of your victim, which was surely exacerbated by the many years which they have endured of not knowing who took the life of their loved one and in what circumstances, you have proceeded to enjoy the prime years of your adult life in undetected freedom, including establishing a family and a business during those years." Unquote. Tracy's sister Bernadette described the 20-year minimum sentence as a slap in the face, noting that Chen had been free for more than two decades since the murder. So she's just like, this is an absolute joke. He's been roaming free for two decades and that's all you're giving him. You know, those are years that my sister could have had. An appeal later on in the year saw that the parole requirement, so the punishment part, was actually cut to 16 years, much to the further upset of Tracy's family. It was argued that Chen was a first-time offender and he hadn't handed himself in out of fear that he'd be extradited to China, where he claimed that the police were corrupt and that he would be unsafe in their custody. Additionally, Chen's circumstances were compared to other first-time offenders who had received lesser periods for the punishment part of their sentence. So I believe that they actually compared his specific case to similar cases and found that most of them got lesser sentences because they were first-time offenders, because of varying different circumstances, and that was taken into account with the sentencing. Lord Menzies, or Mingus, not sure how, depending on how you pronounce it, he stated, quote, "The sentence remains one of life imprisonment. The punishment part means the time which must elapse before the accused is able to apply for parole. The matter of whether an accused person can apply for parole is a matter for the parole board, who assess whether the accused poses a risk to the safety of the public. It is possible that a person serving a life sentence is never released from prison," end quote. So that is the very sad case of Tracy Wilde. Do you have any questions?
That's a really, it's a really unusual one.
Yeah.
Again, it proves the case that if you're fingered for something, despite the fact it's supposed to be, you know, innocent until proven guilty, it can really ruin your life.
Mm. And also that people can just kill once and then pretty much get, you know, theoretically, if you'd not been arrested for that assault charge, you could have gotten away with it.
Yeah.
Which kind of blows my mind as well. You could just accidentally kill someone once and that would be it. And then, you know, you could just live your life out and never get found out. It's just terrifying.
It also surprises me that someone could sort of live in this country freely, flying under the radar for that long.
Yeah.
That's really surprising. Like, how does that happen? You know, is it only at the point where the person's known to authorities that's...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, set up a business. Like, how do you set up a business and not...
Yeah, unless he's done it through people that were, you know, in the country legally. Yeah, it's strange.
It's odd.
I guess it kind of does tie in with his explanation that an argument and things just got out of hand, that it wasn't intentional.
The thing for me, though, is why take her keys and lock the door behind him?
Yeah.
That always struck me as odd.
Maybe just panic that she would be found quickly?
Yeah, I think the other thing that upset me a little bit was friends of hers who must have lived pretty close to her. They had said on the documentary, which you can watch on YouTube, it's in the show notes, they'd said, we weren't happy with her bringing people back to her flat. It, you know, wasn't safe. So we had said to her, if you're bringing someone back and you're not entirely sure, or even just chap on our door, just let us know that you've brought someone back. But she didn't that night.
Yeah.
And our mother didn't know that she didn't even know that she was doing sex work at all. She didn't know. I think that her mother did know about the drugs habit.
Yeah.
It's just really sad.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very sad, especially...
She was 21 and she had a little girl.
She was so young.
Yeah.
And also the fact that she had people looking out for her that potentially could have, you know, saved her life if they'd known that she had somebody in her flat.
I think there's just so many aspects. The guy that was fingered for it and didn't have anything to do with it, trying to live his life out in India, his life's been ruined. All of Tracy's family's lives have been ruined. And her mum passed away before she... if ever found out that someone was done for it.
Yeah.
And it was a complete shock. Like when they took the DNA of this guy, they clearly were not expecting it to come up against anything.
Mm.
So this just blew them away. This came from nowhere, absolutely nowhere, and blindsided everyone.
Well, you think, well, if that's the case, then what chances did police have of actually solving it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And
do you know what I mean? With the best detective work in the world, what chances did they have, basically?
And I think that's why it's so amazing, some of the work that's getting done on genealogy sites in America, where they're finding people now through innocent family members who are uploading their DNA. And there's been several cases solved in America where it's people have done something horrible, murdered or raped someone, and then they've gotten away with it. They've lived their life for decades and gotten away with it. And it's just absolutely mind-boggling. But there is something very satisfying about the knowledge that they've finally been caught. But then you just wonder how many cases are out there where you just never find out. Or worse, you find out once the person's passed away and they can't be held accountable for it.
Yes. That actually brings me to a little point I wanted to let you know about from the Yorkshire Ripper case.
Okay, yeah.
So remember we were talking about it last week and
yeah,
you were asking me about, I did a little bit of research into the case after, just a little bit more because there was so much information on that. The episode in itself took a long time to research and write. So there were avenues that I could have gone off and rabbit holes I could have gone down, which I didn't. And do you remember we were talking about Wearside Jack and the woman who got murdered in Preston?
Yeah.
And it being the same blood group and stuff. Mm-hmm. I had a little look into that after we recorded the episode. And the DNA was matched to a man who was not Wearside Jack or the Yorkshire Ripper.
Oh, wow.
But he has since died.
Did he have other convictions or criminal history then?
I actually didn't even look into it. I just
wondering how they had his DNA.
Yeah, I wanted to find out what the link was and how that panned out, because it was a strange aspect to the case. But yeah, it was another person who was not Wearside Jack or Peter Sutcliffe, and the DNA was matched to Joan Harrison.
Gosh.
The DNA at Joan Harrison's crime scene.
Yeah, I had really wondered, because Wearside Jack obviously had the same
blood group,
and the fact that he was trying to link that murder, and I don't know why, but sometimes I always feel like if someone's fixated on a murder or, you know, tries to highlight a murder, you know, when they contact police, that kind of thing. You've heard of lots of instances where people do that, and it's because they have intimate knowledge of it because they've been involved.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's, maybe he was just a true crime aficionado. Maybe he was just really interested. It's odd. Really odd.
Yeah.
Oh, well, at least that one's been solved. That's encouraging.
Should we have a lighthearted true crime fact?
Yeah, that'd be good. Sorry, a little bit of a depressing one there. Well,
no,
not really.
Okay.
It's solved. That's good.
Yeah.
That part's good, at least.
So, did you know there's a section of Yellowstone National Park where you could probably get away with murder? The Zone of Death is a 50 square mile area on the Idaho side of the park that's entirely uninhabited. If you committed a crime within the zone, there could be no jury because nobody lives there. A trial would be impossible and therefore you could not be convicted.
That's amazing. I mean, terrifying, but that's amazing.
Yeah, but surely they could just call in a jury from surrounding areas.
You would think so. I mean, how do they... I don't get it. I don't get it. How can you...
Well, it's saying there could be no jury because nobody lives there. A trial would be impossible and therefore you could not be convicted. But I think surely they would just call people in from nearby areas to serve on the jury.
So they bring in people... And then you stab them and then they've got to find more people. At what point do they stop?
So there you go.
Just keep stabbing people until... I mean, once again, please don't take any of my ridiculous suggestions as genuine. Please, for the love of God.
Please don't take that as advice either. That's just, you know...
Never take my advice on anything. That's a general rule to live your life by.
So there you go.
Amazing. Love it.
That's our first... true crime fact of 2021.
Starting off strong with some recommendations for murder.
You've been listening to Murder, She Spoke. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can send us any case recommendations or requests for bonus content episodes on our email address. We are at info@murdershespoke.net. We are also launching a Patreon account, which you can sign up to. Our patrons will have access to early release episodes, advert-free episodes, and occasional bonus content. We will also send you a token of appreciation upon joining. So if you are interested in signing up to our Patreon, please do. If you'd like to get in touch with us on socials, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks very much, and we will see you next week.
Bye.